It is Friday, March 20th, 2020. This is the Android Central Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader, and I am sheltering in place right here with all of you. And joining me this week from our home offices, no change there because we work from home every week, every day. Jerry Hildenbrand, welcome back to the show.
Howdy, how you doing?
I'm all right, actually. Today's, you know, it's funny, like today's Friday and usually we're like, yeah, it's Friday. We get to, you know, take the weekend off and not work, but like there's no distinction anymore. I don't feel, it's not a good thing that it's Friday. I've been home with the kid all week. My wife has been home from work and it's just been, it's been a lot. It's been a busy week and yet I'm exhausted. Maybe because I'm so old, but yes. We brought some youth to the show this week. Joe Maring, welcome back. What's going on?
I'm also exhausted, though, so I don't know if that's good or not.
Are you exhausted because you've been... What have you been doing that's made you exhausted? You got no excuse.
Being on Twitter is mentally draining. That's
true. You also have a dog and two cats? One cat? How many cats?
Two cats. Two cats, one dog.
So two that cats for now. Busy. Wait until the grocery stores run out of food.
That will protect them with dog my food?
I mean, you could buy, like, cats don't eat that much. You can buy a year's worth of cat food and just store it in a closet. I have a Great Dane, and she eats a lot.
Yeah.
So we actually had an issue earlier this week where I had to, like, beg my vet, because she's on this, like, specialty food because she's got all these allergies. I had to beg my vet to negotiate with their distributor to get more food for us because we were running out and I couldn't buy it from there's this online resource where you can get like specialty food delivered to you. They are on back order and I called the distributor myself and they said, oh no, you know, we only have a couple of bags and they're all allocated for vets. So your shipment may only get there like mid-April. So I'm like, jeez, that's insane, right? Everybody's not just hoarding toilet paper and flour, but they're hoarding dog food. It really does feel a little apocalyptic out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I went shopping last weekend and like just, it's the same stuff you see on like social media. Like the toilet paper's gone, the chicken's gone, milk is gone, it's... There's some like local stores that haven't been hit as hard, but the big ones like Target and Walmart are insane to go to and just see those aisles completely cleared out of stuff.
What are you guys doing to stay sane at home? Like, I know it's been, you know, we work from home, so it's not that part hasn't really been a massive change, but you know, I still feel really antsy. Like I just feel itchy. Like I just want to go and just like do stuff. Even though I can go outside, I can take the dog for a walk, but it just feels different out there. I don't know.
I think it's a little bit easier for me because I don't get around as much as other people because of the whole wheelchair thing. But even I'm going crazy here.
Yeah, like the work week hasn't been too crazy different just because during the week I basically stay home and work and that's about it. But like on the weekends, Kennedy and I will go to the movies or go out to eat somewhere, and like that's just not going to happen for a while. So I think once like tonight rolls around and Saturday and Sunday come, it's gonna that eerie feeling's gonna creep up even more probably.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the first weekend that everybody is going to be home, right? Like these shelter in place orders were only issued throughout the last few days for most people. California is completely locked down. Jerry, you're in West Virginia. It's been locked down. Joe, is there one in Michigan yet, or are they still waiting on that?
Yeah, the governor issued one earlier this week. So restaurants are only open for like delivery and takeout. There's no in dining or anything like that. Movie theaters are completely closed. Gyms are completely closed. So it's basically just grocery stores, and there are a few non-essentials like Kohl's and some of the other random stores are still open. But like going downtown, it's basically a ghost town most of the time. Like at least people around here seem to be taking it pretty seriously, which is nice.
But you've been there, like you've ventured out a little bit?
Yeah, just to go grocery shopping, to get some essentials, and just looking at the roads and stuff and most of the stores, the parking lots are pretty much dead minus the grocery stores and the drive-through lines at restaurants.
Yeah, that's weird to me. I mean, there's a lot of people out and they're walking around and kids are playing basketball in the streets. But when you go anywhere that would have a lot of traffic or other than grocery stores, it just feels like nobody... I mean, it's good, right? This whole social distancing, stay-at-home mandate, it's necessary. And it seems like most people are following it. And then you see video of spring breakers down in Miami, completely just like ignoring all of the warnings, even though the beaches are now closed. And you just like weep for the future. And then they're all going to come back home and you know, get sick. That part just makes me angry because we're all doing what we can. We're all, you know, putting ourselves at a huge, I mean, it's very inconvenient, right? It's just, you can be selfish and you can pretend that nothing's going on, but then other people have to do the same thing. And when they don't, it's really frustrating. I'll be honest.
Another thing that frustrates me about my situation here is we're doing it county by county. The county I live in and the one adjacent to me where, you know, shelter in place and non-essential businesses need to close. But I can drive 30 miles west and it's situation normal. You know, bars are open. And that does no good. It's not like there's an imaginary bubble wall there. So it's just dumb.
Yeah, I guess this question of like flattening the curve is... It applies to different places at different times, right? Like this, what I found really insightful was hearing stories from Italy this past week and how, because we are basically where they were 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yep.
And it's almost like watching the future play out in real time. And you can see the exponential growth in cases every day. Obviously, that's because of the wider distribution of testing. But obviously, it's also because the same thing is happening in certain parts of the country at a different rate. People are now paying attention more than they were to the shelter, the shelter in place and social distancing. But for the most part, I mean, many people, if they were infected, they were infected a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, and may only be seeing symptoms now, and they were contagious that entire time. And like that's what scares me about this. It's just that you don't really know that you're infected until a couple of weeks or a week or so after you are, and by then you may have spread it around to other people. It's just terrifying. Like everybody I know in my life is so anxious all the time, and it's just like this invisible fear. I don't know. What do you think, Joe? Is this something that you're thinking about all the time, or, you know, are you able to sort of compartmentalize it and put it aside?
I mean, I do my best to do that just because if I like dwell on it too much and if I have the news playing all day, it just kind of consumes me and there's no getting away from it. So I'll try to have my little moments of watching YouTube or trash reality shows on Netflix, kind of distance myself from it for a little bit. But it's always something on my mind. Like if I go out in public to the grocery store or something, I just kind of assume that everyone could have it because at this point we honestly don't know how widespread it is. And it's just being super heightened aware of like different things I'm touching. If I want to touch my face and looking for hand sanitizer and washing my hands as soon as I get back home from shopping. So it's basically one of those things that's always on my mind. Try to get away from it when I can, but it's kind of permanently always in the back of my mind somewhere. And it's probably going to be that way for a few months, I'm sure.
I have a gift for you too. On YouTube, the channel is called Geographics.
It's just, what, nature?
Stuff like, right, Gettysburg, America's Deadliest Battle, the Napoleonic Wars, Chicxulub, the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. This is his playlist, you know? Uh-huh. Vatican City State, good things come in small packages. Amazing, weird history stuff that is 20 minutes of wow with each episode.
So it's that like history podcast that everybody says that they're going to listen to and then never does because it's like 4 hours an episode. Hardcore History by Dan Carlin.
Right, but this is 20-minute blocks, and he makes it very interesting, and the presenter is, I don't know his name, and my internet is so crap it won't load, but it's really good. So if you're listening to Geographics, and no, I don't know the guy or anything, I just think it's fascinating.
I've been trying to read more. I think that's where you know, I was failing a little bit. I was getting consumed by my job and my personal life. And I think that is, I remembered that being the thing that would take me out of my own anxieties, just spending time reading like a physical book on the couch with nothing else going on. I've rediscovered that pleasure, and especially with fiction, right? Like stuff that you just do not, it's just completely a different universe. And it's small moments like that I'm finding really comforting. And I think everybody needs to do that. We've been publishing a bunch of work from home stuff on the site. And a lot of it is like the best way to stay sane while you work. But a lot of it is also like, here are some books, here are some podcasts, here are things to keep you busy so that you don't go crazy just staying at home and feeling nervous all the time.
And it'll get better, everyone. There may be a bit less of us when it's all said and done, worst case scenario, but it'll get better.
I keep asking my wife whether we can watch The Leftovers. And then I'm like, probably shouldn't watch The Leftovers right now.
Do you know what Netflix did? There is a movie about an outbreak of some weird disease that came through a monkey and
what, 12 monkeys?
I think it's called Outbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't on before this happened because it's a movie that I was looking for some reason a few weeks back. Now they've pushed it back to their front page. Mm-hmm. If you go to Netflix, it's right there for you to watch. And that, I don't know, I found that kind of distasteful and funny. And yes, I watched it. So I guess it worked.
Well, also Contagion is like massive right now.
I know, I saw the Outbreak thing on Netflix when I hopped on there last night, and it was in the top 10 in the U.S. right now that people are watching. Like, I guess I could see the irony in wanting to watch something like that, but I think that would just drive me even more insane and anxious to have my escapism be an Outbreak movie or something.
I can't get too angry. I've been playing Plague Inc.
But what is it? I mean, what is it about our personalities, our psychologies, where we want to watch fiction or stories or like hear about all of the terrible things that are happening to other people while they're happening and while we're worried that they're going to happen to us? I mean, I can understand watching the news, you know, and be fixated on the numbers, but watching a film like Contagion or Outbreak, I don't see the pleasure in that.
They have happy endings and the news doesn't.
Yeah, I guess so. Do they have happy endings? I don't know.
I don't think Contagion does. I saw that a few years ago, and I'm pretty sure that was a bleak as hell ending.
Spoilers. But yeah, I don't know. It feels a little bit masochistic to me, but I'm also somebody who doesn't love watching horror movies, so maybe I shouldn't really talk. I prefer watching like a good comedy or something that has nothing to do with viruses and illness.
You should sit down and just watch 28 Days Later and be like,
actually,
the rest of us.
I could watch that because that's actually super entertaining. It's not exactly, you know, zombie outbreaks, not exactly the same thing. Although maybe we're getting to the point with the toilet paper, but I think 28 Days and 28 Weeks Later are just like solid films that I wouldn't mind watching again. But yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to watch comedies lately. I'm watching Veep right now on HBO. Ooh, and
that's fantastic.
That is just an amazing show. It's so smart.
I really wish somebody entertaining, John Oliver, if you listen to our podcast, you would do a fine job. Stephen Colbert.
Oh my God, if John Oliver listens to the Android Central podcast, that would be so cool.
You know, it's a long shot, but there was a fight that had to be had the county sheriff called at the pharmacy down the street, and they were fighting over ibuprofen. There's just everything in the world is wrong with that, and that's because people don't know. And if you're listening and you don't know, don't take ibuprofen if you feel like you've got the flu.
Why?
Not because they say ibuprofen will exasperate the, you know, coronavirus.
Exasperate it?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I just do know it's, you know, the CDC says don't take it. I don't need to know why, but apparently the two people fighting in the pharmacy didn't even know you weren't supposed to take it. And that kind of scares me. There's the information is in the news. A lot of people don't watch the news, especially times like now. They don't want to be depressed. So I would love to see some entertainers get out there and, you know, do a little bit of public service for us all.
Well, that's actually really good to know, because I mean, I usually take acetaminophen when I have a fever, but I sometimes take ibuprofen because I feel like it's similar. It's an anti-inflammatory, but I guess it doesn't work the same way.
Yeah, I don't know the science behind it, but I just happened to catch the CDC warning not to take it. And it made me really feel bad for those people. One, you know, you had to fight for the last bottle of generic, you know, pain reliever. And two, you didn't even know that it's bad for you right now.
My wife said that she was at the grocery store last night, and there was a guy trying to buy out all of the chicken. And he got to the checkout, and the cashier was like, "I'm sorry, sir, you can only buy two packs of chicken at a time." So he was like, "What? It's chicken." And she was like, "Yeah, it's people are hoarding chicken too." So, I mean, this guy was clearly also trying to do the same thing. So my wife was like, "All right, I guess I'll just buy the chicken because it's there and people apparently want it." It's just weird stuff. Like she wanted to buy eggs, and all of the remaining egg cartons had at least one broken egg in
them.
People
were checking to see if there was a chicken inside.
Yeah, so it's just people get irrational. Anyway, let's talk about tech, because we've been talking about this for 18 minutes already. There are some tech stories this week, if you haven't been following, and they're not major, they're not massive, but they're decent size. They're medium fry stories. So let's get into it. The second developer preview of Android 11 was released a couple of days ago, and you two actually jumped on this and found a whole bunch of cool things in it, even over the initial developer preview that was released in February. So let's go through them, because you now have a few user-facing features that are a bit more interesting than the first ones. The first is that you can now see all of your notifications. There's a notification history, and that's not entirely new, because you could kind of like find it through a few hacks in Android 10, but now it's a feature that you can look at and you can see all the notifications that you dismissed.
And it's one of those things that you didn't know you needed until you have it.
Oh yeah. Especially now I have a daughter. She goes through my phone all the time and just loves swiping notifications away. So I don't see a lot of them, because she steals my phone and just runs away with it. And this is going to be super helpful. They're also really, really separating the different categories of notifications over the first DP.
Yeah.
What's going on with that? Because that's not a good look, in my opinion.
No, it kills me. Silent notifications. Well, they're not very silent if they're right on my screen. With a notification history, you could do away with that completely. But the spacing has some issues. It looks really ugly. But I think it's a good idea, because there are some notifications that I would like to have priority and be near the top. And I don't want a developer to have to code that in. I want to one day be able to mark those notifications that they should be near the top. And this is like step one towards that.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're thinking that it'll be easier to like do things manually. later on.
Yeah, like maybe star a notification, like let's say for Slack, we use Slack.
Yeah.
I could star Slack notifications and they stay at the top and don't get buried when somebody's trying to sell me fasteners because my name's on an email list somewhere.
Well, I was going to say in Android 10, like even right now on my Pixel 4, if I kind of do a half swipe on a notification, you get a gear icon and you can already do like alerting or silent notifications. So I don't know what they changed in 11, if it was something behind the scenes and the spacing, or if there's going to be like a bigger overhaul of that in later builds.
I get the impression this is just Google threw it out there while they're still working on it.
Yeah, this does not feel complete to me. Google does this all the time, right? They change things in plain sight, knowing that people are going to make a bigger deal about them than they actually should. But once we get to even the first beta, which is expected in a couple of months, this will feel a lot more cohesive. And by the time Android 11 is released in August or September, then it'll just, you know, it probably won't look anything like this. My guess is that there's going to be a few more visual overhauls that we haven't seen yet. So I like it. I mean, I like that they experiment in plain sight. I like that they take feedback from developers and turn it into actionable changes. And honestly, I think it works. I think this is how they should do it. They released Android 11 earlier than they did previous versions, and it's for this reason, right? They spend more time getting things right, and they give OEMs and developers more time with the actual code. And there's good reason for it, because there are a lot of actually important API changes that we'll get into in a couple of minutes. So the second thing that was added to this build was a screen recorder. So we've seen hints of this forever. We knew that this was coming, but now there is a UI attached to it, and you can now record your screen, including audio. This is a feature that Samsung and many others, Huawei, most Chinese OEMs have a screen recorder built into their Android versions, but this has never been on a Pixel phone before. And I don't know, Joe, do you think you're going to use this, or is this just another thing that Google's throwing in there?
It's probably just to throw it in there. Like you said, almost every other major phone has it at this point, and it's just one of those core features that has been missing for so long that it's going to be nice to finally have it and not rely on third-party apps to record your screen if you need to. So it's not something you're going to use every single day, but for those rare instances where you do need to record your screen on a Pixel, it's just right there and not some random malware app you have to go install on your phone and compromise its permissions.
This really shows me the disconnect sometimes that exists between the team that writes Android and the companies that sell phones. Split screen and dual windows and that kind of stuff was another. Google starts something, makes it so you can do it if you really want to, like screen recording. You could have done that for ages if you want to enter commands and all this stuff. Companies like Samsung and Huawei say, oh, this part of Android now, let's build a UI, let's do it, let's do this, let's do that. That way they have it out there for their customers, but then when Google finally does it, it changes things, and then that makes more work for the Samsungs and Huaweis of the world. Fingerprint sensing was another, you know, time where that happened. Companies want to get this stuff out there for the customers, and Google drags its heels so long sometimes.
But then when they get it right, and then other manufacturers will make slight changes to their implementations to adhere to what Google's doing, and then the ecosystem just feels more coherent. And I prefer that.
Yeah, well, I can see that. I just think from the perspective of the poor people at Samsung that have to work extra hours to make what they've already had work with the new way, they're probably not really happy.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I use screen recording seldom, if ever, but it's good that it's there. I actually really appreciate the fact that Google is... This is kind of like a core user feature that Google has been, that's the kind of feature that Google has been typically reticent to include. But this alongside call recording, which also feels kind of interesting, right? That Google itself is going to implement in its dialer. I don't know. I think that this just speaks to the fact that these are the kinds of features that Google feels are remaining in Android, and that they, you know, that now that the Pixel UI is largely friendly to noobs, if you will, I think these are the more advanced and power user features that people want.
I just hope that they're very, very careful, because look at Hangouts. If you continue to add features because you think they make something better, you can end up with something that is so complicated and convoluted that nobody wants to use it.
Is that why Hangouts died? I don't think so. I think it was a lot more complicated than that. Maybe because Hangouts was just a garbage service to begin with, even though I use it. Don't get me wrong.
Daniel@androidcentral.com.
Listen, I use Hangouts almost exclusively still. Like, to this day, I love Hangouts, but it has not evolved. It is not a good messenger anymore. It is just a very basic service that does the job for me. But when you compare it to almost every other, like Telegram, for instance, which is cross-platform, you can have multiple logins at the same time. It's fast. It's reliable. Hangouts is just not even close. Well, and that's because Google gave up
Hangouts.
On it. Right.
It's
exactly.
It's cross-platform, and I'm signed into it with two different emails and at the same time. And
but that's it's the just thing ugly. Is that the industry, exactly, it's ugly. It doesn't have the new sort of multimedia focused features that people think they want in a messenger. But it's largely just that Google did not prioritize its development. And in 2016, when they debuted Allo, that was the death knell of Hangouts. And now we know that is exactly what's happening. Google is removing features from Hangouts, and eventually they're going to disable it entirely, or push people to Hangouts Meet. And
Hangouts is the new Slack.
It's not great. What Google's messaging strategy is probably more depressing than any other Google topic we could talk about.
Microsoft so should buy it.
Skip it.
Look what they
Microsoft
did for
should
Skype.
Buy Google or hang or
Hangouts. Just Hangouts.
Oh yeah, that'll be great. They already have Skype, Microsoft Teams. What else do they have? They have LinkedIn. You can message people on LinkedIn if you want. That's about as useful as Hangouts.
The messaging platform of the future.
Yeah. Okay. God,
I have so a depressing. Spam folder so filled with LinkedIn.
I check LinkedIn about once every 6 months. And then I see people who are like, hey, Daniel, how you doing? I haven't talked to you in 12 years. Do you want to, you know, grab coffee or write about my app? And I'm like, nope, I'm good. Thanks.
The highlight of my day is getting that email notification, seeing how many people have viewed my LinkedIn profile. I don't know about you guys.
You actually haven't disabled those emails?
No, I need to. It's just one of those annoying things that I say I'll get to every single day, and then I just never do.
To disable
it. Self-isolation, self-quarantine. I've got plenty of time to do that kind of stuff.
But to disable it, you have to sign into LinkedIn.
That's the problem. I don't want to do that.
I just spam filter, baby. I don't see any of that crap.
Well, I appreciate the fact that at least they haven't given up. LinkedIn, even if it's just the cockroaches after the apocalypse, LinkedIn will still be sending those emails to us every day.
Oh, God.
Somebody viewed your profile. And there's nothing we can do about it. Oh, dear. Okay. What else? There's Pixel 4 now has the long delayed and much needed require eyes to be open setting
so
for
useless.
Face unlock. It's not useless. What's useless about it?
It's circumvented by duct tape and a magic marker.
Okay. Come on, Jerry.
Let's be reasonable here. If you live around people that you can't trust that bad, you have no business using biometrics in the first place. Drunk fingerprints will unlock your Pixel 3 or your Galaxy S10.
Mm-hmm.
If you are stuck somewhere and afraid that somebody's going to hold a phone up to your face while you're sleeping, guess what? This doesn't fix that, because all they have to do is put a piece of cardboard with a little black dot over your closed eyelids and it works. It's the same way with the iPhone. It just, it works. This is a placebo. I get that Google needs to do what it takes to make its customers happy, but I just worry that so many people think this is, oh, this fixes it. No, it doesn't. You're still vulnerable.
Okay, we've been through this before. All biometrics are inherently vulnerable. That's why they are conveniences rather than solutions. But it increases the stability of a biometric solution, right? It furthers the threshold, which is what Google is intending with this feature.
Yes,
and it makes it more difficult to hack. It doesn't solve the problem. But
I just don't, you know, want to make sure everybody knows this doesn't make it so.
But that's letting Google off the hook. That's not, I want to make sure that that is clear. Like, this should have been there in October. It's now almost April. It's March. And it's only available in a developer preview that a few thousand people are going to download. So it's not even available to all Pixel users. It will likely come in the next feature drop, which will be, what, a couple of months from now? And if that's the case, then we're only going to get it in May, right? Look for it in like the first week of May. That's strange.
I'd be right on board with you if it was a setting to force you to blink.
A setting force you to blink?
Yes. If you had to look into the phone and blink your eyes or show some sort of movement in your eyes, I'd be right there with you. This makes it better. This is strictly a placebo, and that I wish Google would just explain to people,
Jerry,
that,
but
that,
like,
this
that is,
doesn't make it more secure.
It's a bridge too far. It does make it more secure. You should be saying, you should be encouraging people, if you are at all for added security for biometrics, which I know you are, you should be encouraging everybody to turn that feature on when they get it. You shouldn't be saying it's not enough and that, you know, Google should do more, because all that does is it tells people, well, nothing matters and it's not secure anyway. So, you know, we need to be telling people. You know what I'm saying, though, right? Like, it's,
yeah, I understand you. I just, look, you know what? It's our job to get that message out there, not Google's. So I'm on Team Daniel now, and that's what we're going to do.
It is Google's message. It is Google's job, but they don't do a great job of it.
Right.
That's another issue that Google doesn't do. Also, like, we heard, so last week we talked about, did you get a notification in your bar telling you that there were new features as part of the March feature drop? And Andrew and I hadn't received it. Jerry, you had. And then we asked people to tweet us or email us whether they'd received it. And so many of you, like dozens of people, messaged us saying, yes, I received it. Here's a screenshot. And then Andrew, a few days later, received it randomly after he'd been playing with the, you know, with his Pixel for a while. I think 4 days. It just showed up. And I still haven't received mine. So I believe you. You know, it's there. And I appreciate Google doing it. But it, clearly the distribution was a little bit inconsistent. So
yep.
Anyway, Google is doing a better job, but they need to tell people, or they just need to make this an opt out, right? You need to turn it, once it gets to people's phones, they need to force people to re-enter their face details and put this on by default. And that would be the best move, I think, to ensure that the Pixel 4's biometrics are as secure as possible. So if you're listening, Google, or John Oliver should tell Google to do this, and then they'll listen.
Yeah.
They're way more likely to listen to him than us.
I can see now you're never going to let that go.
I so wanted. I love Last Week Tonight. It's like my favorite show. Oh, my God. I love them. All right. Let's keep going. Improvements to call screening, better detection of foldable hinges, an actual 5G state API. None of this is really that relevant. Updates to scoped storage and apps. Okay, here's one. Apps now have control over refresh rate. So say you're running a Pixel 4, 90 hertz. Say you're running a Galaxy S20 at 120 hertz. Apps can control the refresh rate. So for example, Castlevania was released last week, a remake of one of the best, was it a Super Nintendo game? I forget.
Yeah.
And that does not work properly at 120 hertz because it does not have this ability to manually force your screen to go back to 60 hertz. So this will allow app developers or game developers to force your screen refresh rate down to a number that is usable for that particular purpose.
Which Asus was doing on the ROG phones, and now they have to redo it. More that disconnect.
Yeah, but I mean, that's okay. So one solution for every company rather than many solutions for many companies is always preferred, right?
Sure, sure.
Unless you're that, you know, Samsung or Asus engineer who's staying up all night trying right. to fix it. I get it. Yeah, yeah, totally.
That's a really good thing because I forget what it was, but I played some really crappy game when I first got the Pixel 4, and at 90 hertz, it ran really weird and way fast, which was kind of a pain in the butt. But when you got to those ads, those 30-second ads were over in 19 seconds, and they were like fast forward, and I was like, this is amazing. But it's yeah, good I guess that the so. Developers...
There's benefits to everything. All right, one feature that I do want to talk about quickly is this Android Flash tool. So this was phenomenal. This was the first non-AOSP build that you could use Android Flash tool. Jerry, talk about why this is such a big deal for people like you and I who often flash new builds of our onto Pixel phones and have to do it through the terminal or, you know, through sideloading a zip file through ADB. This just solves all of those issues, basically.
Yep. There'll be a link in the show notes for you to read. Andrew and I worked up really nice explainer on exactly how you can use it. In a nutshell, it's you click a link, you plug your phone in, you click OK, and then 3 minutes later, it's done, and it's flashed. You don't have to download stuff and make sure your SDK tools are up to date and all this other nonsense that you used to have to go through. It's, dare I say it, it's like that one portion of iTunes where you could restore your phone with just a click. This is just that good.
It is really good. It's so... it works, right? Like, you have to enable USB debugging, so you have to go to your... you have to know what you're doing still. Like, this is not right. foolproof. You still have to enable developer mode. You still have to unlock your bootloader. You still have to do all of those things. But once you do it, you just open up a web browser, connect your phone, press go, and you have the new build. It's super seamless.
The one thing, again, is Google needs to be a little more upfront with some things. You know, this is one of those situations where if your cat walks across your laptop and unplugs your cable in the middle of, your phone is now a brick. So you do have to be a little bit careful, which is why I'm okay with still requiring the, you know, enable developer tools. This isn't something you can just do on a whim. But they're, you know, it just like any other way when you're flashing your phone, if it screws up in the middle, your phone is now toast.
I mean, I don't want to tell you to try that, but I don't think it's toast, right? Because fast boot is there for that reason.
It can be fixed, right? But if you're the type of person who can fix it, you probably didn't need this tool anyway. It's more of a convenience thing.
I don't know. I mean, I think this is like a medium level knowledge tool, right? You still need to know what fastboot is. You've probably sideloaded, a factory image or an over the air file using ADB before this. So I can't imagine that if it screws up for whatever reason, you won't have access to fix this manually the same way that you would have fixed it if it screwed up without Flash tool. But I don't know. Maybe,
you know what it when Andrew and I were talking, it reminds me a lot of Odin. There's settings you probably shouldn't touch, and there's that possibility that things can go wrong. But if you do it the way the instructions tell you to, and in the end you just click a button and everything is automatic, it's a lot like Odin.
So you want to hear a story about Odin? This is so funny. So back in 2010, I got the Galaxy Tab 7.0. It was Samsung's first 7.0 tablet, 7-inch tablet. It was fantastic, right? It was like the earliest version of what would become the Nexus 7, right? It was a it was basically a big phone. It even was a phone in some regions. It had a SIM slot. But I was obsessed with flashing new builds of things onto my phones and, I guess, tablets back in 2010. And I had this, like, custom, I think it was Cyanogen mod build on there, and I was testing it. And I'd totally forgotten that Samsung was sending a courier to pick it up. And then I got somebody at the door, and they were like, "Hi, I'm here to pick up something for Samsung Canada." I was like, "Oh my god, I haven't flashed the tablet back." So I said, "Wait at the front door." I run upstairs. I download the factory image for TouchWiz at the time. I open up Odin. And I load it up. I get this into whatever state that it needs to be in to flash. And I press the button and I just pray. I literally like prayed that this would work. And it flashed successfully on the first try, which if you've ever used Odin before, is not guaranteed. And it flashed correctly. I did not even turn it off. I didn't wait for the phone, the tablet to load up the TouchWiz UI for the first time. I just put it in its box. It was still on and loading loading the file, the operating system, as I gave it to the courier. And to this day, I don't know if it works properly. It's probably broken, but I think it worked. And it was like this really nerdy, heart racing experience. I loved it. So I don't know. If you have Odin stories, send us an email or send us a tweet, because I would love to hear them.
Not to get my Android Central card taken away, but I don't think I've ever used Odin. Was it just like a UI that made flashing stuff easier, or is it still around? Like, what easier. Was that?
It is still around. No, it's not easy. It was the only way to properly flash Samsung firmwares onto your product. Right. So like,
Samsung doesn't use Fastboot, Joe. So
yeah.
You have to work with their own proprietary tools to interface with the bootloader.
It was not pretty. Let's put it like that.
And this is something that originally came out of Samsung's engineering lab. Somebody kind of borrowed it, and then it got reverse engineered for Mac and Linux. And it was just as convoluted and a nightmare as it sounds. But it worked.
But it was so satisfying when it worked. Let's be honest. And there was a Mac version called Heimdall, as well. And I forget what the relationship is.
It was just reverse engineered by somebody really smart.
No. Heimdall. I forget how Heimdall was related to Odin, because Odin is a Norse god, right? And Heimdall
I'm using
was
the Googles.
I know, but I shouldn't be doing this live because that's boring. Anyway, if you know the relationship between Odin and Heimdall, let us know.
Heimdall owns the resounding horn Galahorn and is modernly anglicized as Heimdall. That doesn't make any sense. Oh, the R is dropped. In the original Norse, it's Heimdall.
Heimdall is the Norse.
He's also part of the Marvel universe. So there you go.
Yeah, anyway, if you have a more detailed explanation of their relationship, let us know. Okay, we're running out of time, so we will keep going here. There are a few more things that happened this week. The LG V60 launched in the U.S. It is $700 if you don't want the dual display, and it is $800 if you don't want the dual display, and it is $900 if you do. Joe, what is your take on this device? It's, I'm not really sure I'm excited about it, but I'm getting a review unit later today. So I'm sure I will let everybody know in next week's podcast. But just looking at it, is this something that interests you over, say, a foldable phone?
For me, looking at it, I have zero interest in the secondary display attachment. I just think on paper, for a lot of people, it could potentially be appealing, just because at T-Mobile it's $799 and you get a Snapdragon 865, 3.5mm headphone jack for the quad DAC for the people that are still marching in that parade. POLED display, 8 gigabytes of RAM, I think. And, or yeah, 128 gigabytes of storage is expandable. Compared to the S20 for $1,000, I can see why a lot of folks would be interested in potentially picking one up, but I think it's going to come down to how LG software holds up, and there's still the fact that updates are going to probably be non-existent. And if you're going to want to put up with LG software as it is and be okay running Android 10 for the next year just to save $200 for those specs and the headphone jack. So, and I mean, there's also the availability question too, because it's only being sold through AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon, and there's no way to buy it unlocked. So it's an interesting device. I'm curious about it, and I think it's a potentially good value proposition, but I just am worried that LG being LG with its software will probably hold it back and make it a non-starter for a lot of people.
Yeah, so Andrew and Hayato both have V60s right now, and their first impressions were pretty negative of the launcher, at least. So the software still has a long way to go to catch up, which just boggles my mind because honestly, you know, it's 2020, right? LG has been flailing in the software department for years already, and I just find it bizarre that they haven't fixed some of these endemic issues, especially with the launcher, which is like the first thing that you interact with on a new phone. But hopefully, once you get over those irritants, it's a decent product. And the audio is still the best in the business. And Jerry, like, you really care about this stuff. You know, you still plug headphones into things if you can. And, you know, it's still a big deal.
Yeah, I used the V10 long past its useful life just as an audio player. So,
right.
And something tells me that the software on this isn't going to be that much different from my old V10.
Yeah, for better or worse. I mean, pretty much for worse, but definitely it's an experience. So,
and I hate that because this is the only foldable that I'm interested in until Microsoft releases theirs.
You know, I used the G8X for a while, and I didn't mind it. I really think LG has something here with the dual display add-on and the fact that you can take your phone out and it just operates as a regular device. I'm a little concerned that, you know, once you stop using the dual display, you're not really going to bring it with you places. So unless you keep the phone in there the entire time, which makes it this like thick beast of a device to put in your pocket, I wonder if people are just going to let it, you know, just put it in a drawer somewhere and forget it exists.
But this LG makes phenomenal hardware, and this actually has bezels that people hate, but people with big clumsy fingers like me enjoy having bezels. This would be, you know, a phone I would be really interested in. It runs Android 10, so that little bit of extra privacy that Android finally gave us with, you know, one-time location access. And, you know, this would be a phone for me other than just LG's horrible software and all the bloatware the carriers are going to stick on it.
Yeah, this is the first LG flagship in a while that won't be sold unlocked in the U.S. It's only going to be available on carriers. And I think Hayato counted 28 pieces of bloatware on the AT&T version. God.
That sounds about right.
You know what you're in for if you're buying anything from AT&T, but just get ready to disable a lot of stuff.
I imagine it makes a good remote control for your LG washing machine, though.
yeah, definitely. If you're in that ThinQ ecosystem, you're not going to regret it. Also, the name of the Verizon version here is the LG V60 ThinQ 5G UW. UW standing for Ultra Wideband, which is the most terrible and convoluted name of any device I've heard since the original Samsung Galaxy S Fascinate, you know, 4G super duper, you know, Ultra whatever back in 2010. Like, we're really getting back there with these 5G phones. It's not pretty.
Well, not to drag the V60 conversation on for too much longer, but, and like, from my perspective, I've yet to use a folding phone like a Galaxy Fold or a LG G8X or another LG phone with the secondary attachment. But for someone like you, Daniel, who's used the Fold and the GAX, like, do you feel like you're getting the same functionality and usefulness out of a attached secondary screen that you get from a singular folding screen? Or is there still that clear distinction of it feels like you're using two phones that are kind of glued together?
So the logistical, the usage is the same in the sense that you are opening up a small phone into a big phone. If you think about it that same way, right? Except that there's no front screen the way that there is on the Fold. But the issue is that because it is a distinct second screen, LG thinks that the default use case should be to have a second app on that screen rather than with a Fold. The app, the single app, expands to fill that entire tablet-like space, and then the then you can go ahead and divide the screen into two or three apps. So it's a reverse of the default use case that you would expect from a foldable. You can expand some apps to full screen. Most of them will not work across the dual display. But the apps that do still have that major, that like massive black bar in the middle, and that's not just a usability issue, but it's an aesthetic problem that a lot of people are going to dislike. But it also offers a ton of flexibility that you don't have with the Fold. So I don't know if one is a better solution than the other. I think right now the Fold or other kind of any foldables are a bit more elegant, and I don't think app developers are going to explicitly optimize their apps for LG's solution, which they will have to do, right? They have to whitelist an app, or you can try to force an app to go full screen across both displays, but some of them just don't work anyway. If this was Samsung, it would be a different story, but it isn't. And most developers don't care about LG phones because the user base is so small.
Android 12, where Microsoft and Google have got together to work on, what is it, the Surface Neo? Is that the right one?
Yeah, Surface Neo.
That probably will fix all this. Too bad no LG phone will ever see Android 12.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. That's the Duo. Sorry, the Neo is the Windows
Duo. Okay, yes. There's just so many of them, I can't. You know, good thing I don't work at a website about Android phones, huh?
Well, if you're interested in the Surface Neo, you should go to Windows Central because they have a ton of stuff about Windows 10X right now. And our colleague Zach Bowden is breaking all of the stories about 10X because he's got early builds. So check out their YouTube channel. All right, let's get through the rest of these stories. So this week, PlayStation 5 was revealed in a lot more detail. We're not going to get too heavy into it, but there's tons of stuff on the website about it. Don't ask us why we cover PlayStation on AndroidCentral.com. We've been doing it for 5 years. If you have a problem with it, too bad. But this is going to be it's going to be a beast, but then our Windows Central colleagues also say that it's not quite the beast that the Xbox Series X is. And yet, Jerry, the main distinction here is not in the GPU, but it's in the SSD. Now, this applies to phones a little bit as well, right? So talk us through why the storage speed is so important on the PlayStation 5 and how it may relate to phone speeds down the road.
Well, it definitely relates to phones, especially when you come to games. what shows up on your phone screen doesn't directly come from your, like, if you've downloaded a game on your PlayStation or your phone. It doesn't directly play that game from its installation to your screen. There's a buffer. And that means that something has to fill that buffer while something is taking away from the buffer at the same time. And you have to fill the buffer faster than you take away from it. This SSD arrangement and the custom controller they have will make sure that buffer is always full. And that's going to be a pretty big deal. It's great to have a, you know, 0.5 more teraflops so you can see one more cloud in your game. But it's not so great if that cloud doesn't show up until halfway through the scene. And what Sony is doing is making sure that cloud is there instantly, because that buffer is always going to remain full because of the way it can stream data from the disk.
Right.
So that's a big deal for games. I think everybody's played a game where you start doing something and you notice things loading while you're playing that game, whether it be on your phone or on your PlayStation or on your PC. That happens. Sony's trying to prevent that from happening completely.
Yeah, I guess load times are just something that people have gotten used to. They just build them into the experience. Or as Mark Cerny was talking about during the presentation, that game developers have built ways to load transitions, right? So that when
right.
you purge textures and other assets while you load others through a long corridor or like a windy stretch of dungeon or something. That's usually the way that it's done, and game developers have just like, it's just part of game design, level design.
Yep. This, you know, we're still going to have cutscenes, and we're still going to have that long stretch of woods with every tree being exactly the same, because that's just how games are built. But this alleviates a lot of the issues. Once you get out of that hallway or past those trees and you want to see a new screen, ideally, everything will be rendered beautifully all at once. And this is one way to go about doing it.
Joe, what's your initial impression of the PS5 versus the Series X? Which one's like at the top of your mind, I'm going to buy it day one, if either of them are?
My heart wants to say both, but I don't know if my wallet will agree with that. Honestly comes down to the games, just because there are so many Sony exclusives that I've gotten into over the years, like Last of Us, Uncharted, Horizon Zero Dawn. So from that end of things, it'll probably be the PlayStation 5 first, assuming Sony gets some of those exclusives to go along with it or within that release window. But at the same time, I'm kind of addicted to Xbox Game Pass just because it's a stupidly good deal for playing a lot of games without spending a ton of money. So at some point, I'll probably end up getting both of them, but it just kind of comes down to if Sony can get those exclusives to go with the PS5 to make it a little bit more attractive, just because Microsoft's exclusives arguably aren't as strong. But from the whole memory, GPU, CPU, I'm not super interested in that, because I know both are going to have very pretty, very fast games. So it really just comes down to the content that these companies can associate them with right out of the gate for release time.
That's where you think Microsoft would have the advantage, because they're such a huge company and they build the tools that game developers use to make games play on Windows. But it's the opposite. That's where Sony has an advantage with exclusive games mm-hmm. and developers that are excited to work with them. And I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Stadia, Microsoft, Sony, they're all trying to buy up or create their own studios just so that they can keep this train rolling. It's interesting, right? Like you have a game like Animal Crossing come out today for the Switch, and you know people are rightfully talking all about the beauty of Doom Eternal in contrast, and how like stunning it is on the Xbox One X or on PC or whatever. But then a game that has nobody's going to talk about the graphical prowess of a Switch when they buy Animal Crossing, but most people don't really give a damn, right? Like people are just, they love these Nintendo games, right?
Yep.
And I've had a few people ask me, should they buy a PlayStation 4 Pro or Xbox One X right now, given that they're pretty discounted?
No.
What would you say to that?
No.
No. You think people should wait until the fall?
The
holiday?
You're going to kick yourself right in the behind if you don't wait until end of October. These new consoles are going to come, and they're going to be priced about the same price that the 4 Pro and the 1X released at. So they're going to be more expensive than these discounted current-gen consoles, but they're going to be well worth it.
I have a PS4 Pro. I play it too seldom enough to even justify thinking about the PlayStation 5, but I also canceled my Stadia subscription this morning. I was like, should I buy Doom Eternal for Stadia? And I decided, no, I'll just buy it on the PlayStation 4. So I wanted to talk about a couple other things, but we're already at our 1 hour mark and I don't want to go too far over. We'll save a couple of these stories for next week. The Huawei, we'll have more details actually about the P40 and P40 Pro by next Thursday when the phone is unveiled officially. So we'll have a lot of Huawei talk then. We'll try to have Alex Dobie on the show. And then briefly, Sonos is going to be updating its OS, completely overhauling its software and firmware experience. I don't know if firmware is an experience, but software at least, in June with an S2 update. Read more about that on the site. Really, really interesting. It's why Sonos got into such hot water earlier this year by obsoleting a bunch of its old hardware. And Joe wrote up a really good story about that, so check it out. All right, we're gonna leave it there. Tell us how you've been spending your time at home the last couple of weeks. Let us know how you're doing, and just know that we're thinking about all of you. I know it's been a really, really tough few weeks. It's gonna get tougher for a lot of us, and I hope that you're hanging in there and that you're trying to do things that are good for your body and good for your mind and good for your soul. So from all of us here at Android Central, we love you. We're thinking about you, and hopefully we are helping you with your work from home reality. You can find Jerry at GB Hill. You can find Joe at Joe Maring 1 on the Twitters. Jerry's been spending more time on Twitter, which I appreciate because you make good tweets.
I guess.
You can find me at Journey Dan. You can find all of us at Android Central. That's it for this week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Adios.
See ya.